Blog Talk Radio.
Put his hands together like box, you know, and maybe he thought, well, there's only a few seconds left, you know. want to check with the timekeeper. Whatever he was doing, he wasn't looking, so he didn't see what happened. But either way, you know, he did, or Chief did hug him at first, kissed him on the cheek, then backed up, then, you know, did another apology, and then rubbed his hands together. You know, you got to be aware of what that means. That's Fox. You know, you think Floyd's not mad about it. He looked like he had like a little bit of a hole in his fucking chin from that headbutt. So, you know, react different ways to shit like that. So, I don't know.
You know, like, you know, hey, if you do a foul and you get caught, okay, that's cool. Yeah, tap a glove. That's about it. You know, you don't have to get on this huggy, schmoozy. On the same lines, go back and watch the one replay. Floyd knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know? Because look at his eyes when Ortiz was giving him that last hug. He's like looking at him like, okay, you're going to back up. You're going to back up. You're going to, as soon as you do, whack, whack. Floyd's never been, cleaner fighter out there. But, you know, he'll do things that are borderline. But on the same lines, he can defend himself saying, hey, the referee didn't say, you know, referee didn't say break or referee didn't say like stop or anything. So he'll have a point. Along the other lines, I remember a guy one time, you know, I it was before the third round. In college and amateur boxing, you don't have to touch gloves when it's done in the last round. We were fighting up in New York. I was fighting a tall kid from the Air Force. Not as tall as Sletton, but tall. And, you know, third round was coming up. I put my hand out and touched glove, and he threw a cutthroat punch over the top of it. You know, he fucking regretted that.
Yeah, the worst foul I've ever seen is a kid that used to chop the arm and wrestle there in a four-point stance and just fall right through the nuts every time. Perfected this cheating move. And it was the second time I faced him, and it was in sectionals. And I fucking get up and I kneed him right in the face. The ref took a point off us both. So that was the closest I ever came to an official MMA match. But, Griff took a point from us both, and I and some people are just good at being real dirty at the right time, you know. And I think it definitely helped if Cortez wasn't looking. But I wonder, the big thing is, I wonder what would have happened if he did see it. Do you think he would have stopped the action and taken a point away? From Floyd?
I really think Joe has swept the last few years. Joe Cortez is one time is one of the best referees in the world. He has definitely lost some zing on his fastball. He really has. He's making mistakes now. He's struggling out there. And I don't know what he would have done. I don't know if he would have been in there quick enough to halt the action when Mayweather landed that first punch.
Right. Well, it's funny, in certain angles you could see Ortiz looking right at the ref after that first punch. Like, come on, ref. Help me out. And then, boom, there goes the knockout blow. One thing about it, I mean, is if you love it or hate it, or whatever your decision is, you know, if you're, I always have to accept that it is what it is, but no matter what way you feel about it, you have to admit it's like the most unique way a fight's been ended in a long time. And everybody's talking about it, you know? So it's like Floyd's image just gets blown up from it either way. But I put out a little blog that had the fight and the staged combat between the Big Show and Floyd and WWE. And how that all ended, and that's like art imitates, or life imitates art sometimes. Straight out of WWE. But anyway, the whole controversy kind of blurred out the rest of the night's fights. I thought the Eric Morales fight was pretty impressive. Sure, that guy's still pretty game. And Jesse Vargas did pretty good. It's kind of close, but he got the decision win there. Tough test for him. So there's a couple good fights underneath it. a good card overall. The other controversy, too, is, of course, the interview after the fight. Our good buddy.
Oh, that
think the announcers had a chance to put their scorecard up. right at the end. It literally ended at the last second of the fourth round. But what's done is done. The rematch, I don't know if it will solve anything, so I think they're just going to move right to the negotiations.
Well, rematch will solve nothing.
And Pacquiao, Mayweather easily brings in $50 million for both guys, because Floyd's supposed to going to make at least $40 million. Off of his portion of this last fight. So, I mean, sky's the limit for those two to fight. But I think it's going to have to happen in 2012. That's it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously, with, you know, Pacquiao fighting Marquez in, you know, just a few weeks, a few months, I should say.
November. And that's the same.
Yeah, November, the 12th and the 13th, I think.
Of course, that's the same night, too, of a big UFC fight, Fox, their debut on Fox. It's going to bring MMA to the masses, to the same crowd that watches Sunday football. We'll see if it works, you know. That's the big thing. You know, they're getting so much hype off of that deal. It's unbelievable. But we just had a UFC event last weekend, same night of the Floyd Mayweather fight, and we also have one coming up this weekend, and I got a chance to watch John Jones and Rampage Jackson on one of the late night shows there. Here's Jimmy Kimmel. He had Dr. Phil on the same show, ironically enough. But those two just are ready to rip each other's heads off. And that's the main event this weekend. It's been a long time coming. There is some controversy because Jones broke his hand or had a ligament damage, needed surgery on his hand. So he backed out of the fight with Rashad Evans, who had been his former training partner in the gym where all these guys had promised not to fight each other. And they had to fight each other. Those guys are ready to rip each other's heads off in the future. Quentin Rampage Jackson was somehow inserted in the middle of it and got this fight with John Jones after Jones revealed that he wasn't going to have the surgery and he could have another fight. So this is the culmination of that. Jackson has the experience. You know, he's fought guys like Chuck Liddell from prime time period of his career. He's beaten some incredible opponents. He's on a tear. He's won his last few fights. So John Jones, being the younger guy, he does have one advantage. He's got incredible reach. He's got dynamic striking. And Jackson is the type of guy that was in the bang with the guy, but Jones is going to hit him with different things. And just get the spin back kick and this and, you know, all that stuff. Having one arms and all that he's good for. Also on the card, another couple of legends in the sport. We've got Matthews versus Josh Koscheck. Travis Brown fights Rob Brown. Nate Diaz versus Takanori Kili. Ben Rothwell versus Mark Hunt. Tim Butch versus Nick Wing. Tony Ferguson versus Aaron Rodney. Coco Escovedo versus Takeo Mizugaki. Ricardo Romero versus James Tahuna. And Junior Austin Kay versus Eddie Egan. And out of all those fights, I think I'm looking forward to Boach versus Nick Ring. Boach is an animal in Ring. Still kicking around the UFC. He's one of the Ultimate Fighter guys from a while back. Injured his knee real bad and was out for a while. And now he's back in action. But anyway, that's this week's event. And there's some title implications there, of course, because I'm the title holder. That's always heavy right there. I also have UFC Technique 25, same night as the Floyd Mayweather fight. Main event there was kind of a shocker. We just saw Jake Shields in the that fight, Taiga wasn't near the distance. And the fight of the Jake's hair, Jake Allenberger versus Jake Shields, was the main event. And they stopped in the first round. Shields just got demolished by Allenberger going striking on him. And I actually remember saying before this fight that this is going to be a wrestling process. Both these guys have wrestling backgrounds, but I guess Jake wanted to prove a point that he can strike too, and just swarmed Schultz, knocked him out. And it was a pretty entertaining fight. We also had Court McGee winning by decision over Dongi Young. Eric Koch beat Jonathan Brookins in a unanimous decision, which was kind of surprising. Brookins had been on The Ultimate Fighter. He was just phenomenal with his style and always looked good. But he also had an injury he's come back from, so maybe that had something to do with it. Alan Belcher beat Jason McDonald by submission via punches in the first round. Wagner Rocha beat Cody McKenzie by submission, rear naked choke. Cody McKenzie, not a really guy. If I remember correctly, his favorite submission was the guillotine on The Ultimate Fighter. He's always getting it, too. Evan Dunham beat up Shamar Bailey in a unanimous decision. Bailey was another wrestler from The Ultimate Fighter show. He didn't do too well when he tried to show that he could do the stand-up. We had Lance Benoist beat Matt Riddle. Another unanimous decision. One of the decisions on this card. Ken Stone beat Donnie Walker by technical submission, who needed a choke in the first round. Seth Baczynski beat Clay Harbison by submission in the second round. TJ Wahlberger beat Mike Stumpf by submission in the first. Robert Peralta beat Mike Lulo by decision, unanimous again. And finally, Justin Edwards beat Jorge Lopez by unanimous decision. And it was a pretty interesting card, but I was kind of going back and forth between the undercard of the Floyd Mayweather fight and Maxson Raw on there. And pretty much about covers the UFC upcoming and past events there. There is some controversy going with the Alistair Overeem signing now with the UFC. Apparently now he separated himself from his management team, Golden Glory. And there's some back and forth here as far as how UFC has to pay Golden Glory before it money gets to the fighters. But now I guess there's going to be a lawsuit. Golden Glory is threatening to sue because Alistair Overeem, right after he signed with the UFC, decided to split Golden Glory. And he says that it's a breach of trust. That's a quote. Breach of trust is what he said is the problem. No details behind it. But he's going to be fighting at the end of the year. He's going to be fighting Brock Lesnar. And whoever wins that is going to go on for a title fight between order of Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez, so they're between the heavyweight division alive there. Some exciting matchups. Both guys are coming up getting banged up. Well, Brock Lesnar by medical condition, Overeem with multiple injuries. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, but this legal dispute is interesting, too. I just read somewhere, I didn't actually read the article, but I saw the headline that John Ola Einemo got really slapped by the UFC. And he was just thrown out of Friday Courts not too long ago. So there was a little bit of controversy with that because it's part of the Golden Glory team, too. Well, there's another bit of boxing news this week, too. Saturday, in its season premiere, 48 Hours Mystery is going to examine the Gannett case and try to determine what might have happened. and there's been a loss to Canada. There's the mother of one of Gotti's children, I think, has filed a suit to.
I saw that. I saw you sent me the link on it.
And Rodriguez is now in Montreal for a civil trial brought by Gotti's family concerning his estate valued at $3.4 million, according to the Montreal Gazette. And the two sides supposedly were close to a settlement on Wednesday, but it didn't happen. And Rodriguez has testified in the trial that he had a whole team to study the whole case, all kinds of private investigative work, and they think it's impossible for him to have hung himself. So supposedly the Brazilians are going to look at it, but you know, don't look for anything to happen on their part. You know, what's done is done for them, I bet. But there's definitely going to be some civil developments from all this. And it's going to be interesting to see them put it on primetime TV like this, in an investigative show. It's definitely an interesting case. But it's kind of unfortunate that we'll probably never see Amanda in cuffs.
Now, you know, I'm waiting to see this on a copy of Forensic Files, one of my favorite shows. they talk about all the forensic evidence. Now, I don't know if you ever watched that show. It's on, I get it on some nights on True TV Network or whatever it's called. Of course, you know, it's the second best show on True TV Network now that we have Hulk Hogan's midget wrestling.
Yeah. That show, too, I guess there's Half Pint Ballers pissed off about that one. Another show.
Yeah, well, I love it. Well, yeah, the show on Forensic, I mean, some of the ways they figure shit out is unbelievable. I remember they were talking about a woman that, you know, her son murdered her. She was like 80-some years old, and he killed her, and he like threw her over the balcony to make it look like it was an accident. And they're like, there's no way this woman who was 5'2" could have fallen over the balcony, even if she did jerk the other way trying to grab something from him. She wasn't tall enough. The center of gravity wasn't aligned right. And then they should make little things like, oh, yeah, the mark where the whatever was supposed to hit the siding. Well, that was staged because it was an upward stroke, not a downward stroke. You know, cool shit like that. So if anybody can figure out, you know, the true story of Arturo Gotti, it'll be the people on Forensic Files.
Yeah. That is a good
show. But, no, I mean, just the pictures in the article that you all sent me, the way the body was positioned, the way he was laying and all that. It didn't seem likely. It really didn't. I mean, well, even if he would have hung himself long enough with a purse strap, now you figure Gotti in his career fought at the end of his career, he was at like 146 pounds. Well, obviously, and you being an athlete just like I was, you know, that is not, that's your in-shape weight. So if you fought at 185 pounds in college, what was your normal weight? Yeah, probably around 200. And Gotti used to kill himself to make that weight. So you figure Gotti was a guy that was normally around 165 pounds. So every fight he'd have to lose, say, 20 pounds. You know, about, you know, what was a seventh of his body weight or whatever, an eighth of his body weight. So, I mean, even if that was enough to break the strap after, say, enough time for him to have hung himself, they said there's no way that his body could have ended up underneath the one, like, counter or whatever it was.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those cases where it's definitely worthy of a closer look. But for some reason, you know, the thing that intrigues me most is probably the one thing that we'll never really get any justice for is the way the Brazilian police just, you know, kind of detained for like 2 days and then just boom, let it go, and never filed charges and said those things. Like, whoa, what the hell happened in 2 days? You know, whatever, however long it was, I forget. But, man, they were grilling our heart, and they obviously suspected something, but they didn't do anything about it. They just said, suicide.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
Nobody should, meet an end like that, whether you're a celebrity or not. Okay, Arturo had his demons. He didn't. Actually, I was reading the article I wrote last year after he passed away. I sent that to that girl that I talked about getting on her show, the fight promoter. Because I had sent her, to show that I'm legit. Because I'm getting a press pass for next week's fight card, I sent her my Mayweather Ortiz preview. And she really liked it. And I said, well, if you're a Gotti fan, I said, this is probably the best piece of writing I've ever done. And she was like, oh, please send it to me. So I sent it over to her. I don't know if she's had a chance to read it yet, but, it got the foot in the door. It just happened to be a chance. I'm at work for one day, and, a woman that I just got a job there. We used to work together for about 10 years. Got her a job with me, and she's like, oh, check out this little thing I got in my local, Bucks County paper. I was like, female boxing promoter, 22 years old, interned with the Peltzes, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, shit. I'm like, they're mentioning people in this article that I know. I'm like, well, it's pretty interesting. So I don't know, let my dad read it. My dad's checking it out. I'm like, let me see if this girl's on Facebook. I mean, I'm friends with Russell Peltz and a lot of other boxing personalities on there. If she's on there, it's going to come up that we have, a shitload of mutual friends. There she was. Boom. Friend requested. It was accepted within a matter of seconds.
Whoa.
And I sent her saying, read your article. I said, let's come to your show next week. Here's a website I write for. I said, I know a lot of people in the Philadelphia boxing, circle. I'd like to get a press pass for your show to bring my camera in there. And I said, and let me know what I can do to help. I said, I'd like to have you on as a guest. And she emailed me back with that. I mean, literally a matter of seconds. She's like, this is fantastic. And she goes, I'd love to be on your show. She got in to me like, what do I got to do? And I'm like, listen, I said, I got your contact info. I'll send it over to Rich. So just expect a contact from him hopefully soon.
Yeah, and they have the weigh-ins are next Thursday night, so we can't get her on then. But we're going to have her on. And I
figured next Thursday would not be good.
Yes,
it was the night before the fight.
In the boxing links from today, there was a story about her, too, from one of the big Philadelphia papers, Bernard Fernandez, I think was the guy that
wrote. Yeah, I read that. I know Bernard, so...
So she's getting some good press for her very first event here that she's promoting, and it's a very impressive website too, the Band Boxing promotion site there. So she started out, she's got a good design, and we're going to be excited to talk about it. But where is the show happening down there in Philly?
It's at the National Guard Armory down in Northeast Philadelphia, at Cotton on the Boulevard, somewhere else on there.
All right. Lots
of there. The new Ray Robinson is fighting. Not the real Sugar Ray Robinson, but a Philadelphia fighter like the new Ray Robinson. So I'll be down there checking that out.
Wow.
It looks like an interesting card, and that's the thing with me, and Rich, me, I'm a fight fan. You give me a chance to go to a fight, you do damn well I'm in.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna get our first guest on the phone in a few minutes here. Just working on the details. I did want to mention a Philadelphia guy, George Benton, just passed away.
Yeah, very very sad. And what was ironic about it was I was just thinking about Georgie Benton on Sunday. After we had the fight on Saturday night, And as much as I should have been thinking about Mayweather and Ortiz, I kept thinking about Roger Mayweather and how I can't stand him as a trainer, because that's something he would do. And I'm not bashing Floyd for what he did, but Roger was a guy that after a fight punched Lou Dude in the face. Roger was a guy that, when I was watching 24/7, I don't know who this kid is. I never even heard of him. He's a bum. He's a nobody. And I always said, only an idiot would say something like that. I'm fighting Rich Bergeron. Well, you know what? If I come out there and say Rich Bergeron's a bum and he kicks my ass, well, then either I'm no good because I got my ass kicked by a bum, And if I beat Rick Flair, well, you know what that proves? Nothing, because I just beat a bum. Now, Rich, how long have I been saying that about these, you know, knuckleheads? Probably ever since I've been on the show with you. And I was thinking, I'm like, you know, these guys go down and claim I'm the best trainer in the world. I can do this. I can do that. I said, no. I said, first of all, they don't know shit about boxing. And I said, you know, some of the guys that over the years that were just great trainers and classy guys that, you know, were no longer with us. And I was thinking guys like Eddie Futch, guys like Ray Arcel, you know, other than Jimmy Arthur, who spent a long time working with me. And I said, you know, some really good, not just trainers, but teachers. And guys that really, really molded guys. Boone Fisher was another great guy that we just lost. And then I was thinking about some people that were still alive. And I was like, you know, some really classy guys. I was like, you know, Gil Clancy we just lost was a very classy gentleman. And I was like, you know, we still got guys that are up there like Freddie Roach, Emanuel Stewart, Buddy McGirt. And I'm like, and Georgie Benton. I'm like, nobody ever thinks about Georgie Benton. I said, he did a great job with Holyfield, Pernell Whitaker, Meldrick Taylor, and all those guys. And then it was like literally the next day he died.
That's weird.
Yeah.
You have a connection to the spirit. he's sounds like an impressive dude. I'm reading this article about him. It says his record was 62-13-1 with 36 KOs. He never got a chance to fight for a title, but it was not for lack of talent or effort. It was well known that Flynn was an avoided fighter. Famous Philadelphia and Hall of Fame promoter Russell Peltz explains that George's loyalty to promoter Herman Diamond, who refused to do business with mob people that had power over the sport in the 60s, kept him away from a title shot. Peltz stated the middleweight title changed hands 22 times during Benton's 21-year career, and he never got a shot. So that's kind of interesting. He was a stand-up guy. He didn't screw around with the mafia.
At
that time, that was run by the mafia. But still put together an impressive record. Interesting guy.
Very briefly, Last Thursday after we got off the air and they had that, you know, streamlined fight. And I knew from the first round that Rogers was going to have a tough time. He really, his legs looked bad. Rogers Mcagua when he fought Johnny Gonzalez, a title shot. Oh, I said just from the start, I said his legs looked bad. He looked almost like a newborn calf or what do you call them? Horses, whatever they call horses' babies are. Newborn little horse baby that can barely walk. That's what his legs reminded me of from the start. And his punches were like wide. They were off balance. And I said, this is not the guy I know. This is not the guy that I watch train. I said, you know, I'm like Johnny Gonzalez. I mean, he backed Gonzalez up and he hit him with a body shot, which was a good strategy. One of Gonzalez's last losses, he was knocked out by a left hook of the body. And I remember Ring Magazine saying, that lump in his throat is his liver. And I laughed at that, and I'm like, well, apparently they're adopting the same strategy, trying to get him with a good body shot. But his leg was gone, he was off balance, and Gonzalez caught up to him.
Did he take more blows than a box of Kleenex?
Yeah. Well, the fight was stopped probably a little bit prematurely, but the referee did a good job. Cause, I mean, as of, like, the second round when Rogers was getting hit with a lot of shots, I was like, you know what? He has no chance of winning this fight. Because right now, even his bombs, which I said were legendary. I mean, watching him spar back in, like, 1999, 2000, watching him hit guys over the years and knocking guys out cold with a single shot, I said, I can tell you right now, he doesn't have it. He's not able to put him on a bunch of shots. So when he got called up to two shots, he definitely stopped it. I was upset, you know, losing the shot. But at the same time, I was sitting there saying, you know what, maybe it's going to be better.
Yeah, definitely going to be interesting. We have an MMA guest, come on, Cody Ballinger. on the phone, came back and to show you some lamb's tail here, but before I do, I am going to give you a ultimatum. You have to ask at least 3 questions, Tony.
3 questions?
Yes. At least 3.
I
bring them back to boxing somehow.
I'll be right back.
Hello?
Cody.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouser Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. How's it going?
Hey, how are you doing, man?
Great. Tell us a little bit about this fight you got coming up.
I just fought, let's see, like 2.5 weeks ago, something like that. Don't really have a fight coming up yet, just kind of waiting on a call from my manager, work on that right now, and waiting for something either big, you know, good payday, or UFC to call. So just kind of waiting it out right now after this big win.
All right. And you've been fighting a little while. What would you say was the toughest fight you've had so far?
My toughest fight so far, even though I won the fight, it's my fight against Nick Trejo back when I was like 16, 17 at Avi in Lofton. Real battle, started off the first round, losing like 4 out of the 5 minutes, came back, finished round strong, lost the round, came back, won the fight with a broken nose and 2 cuts on my face.
That's tough to do these days.
What?
Win a fight with a broken nose.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, it also says here you coached UFC rep Joe Big Daddy Stevenson, right?
Yeah, he's actually my godfather. I've known him since I think I was 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about what it's like to work with that guy.
I think it's a real advantage, you know. He's more of a, I'm the oldest in my family, and he's kind of an older brother figure to me, you know. He's made a lot of great choices, a lot of success in this game, and, you know, a lot of mistakes that I, fortunately, you know, on his mistakes, I get to learn from. I get to learn what to do, what not to do, and I get to kind of take after, but be the 2.0 version of him, you know, like a little prodigy.
And you just beat Cameron Dollar, right? Another UFC guy.
Yeah, I just beat Cameron Dollar and went all 3 rounds. I got a unanimous decision, all 3 judges,
30-27. Awesome. And it sounds like you got into fighting because of your father. He's also a mixed martial artist, right?
He got me into the whole wrestling and jiu-jitsu and MMA thing, and then he decided just one day out of the blue he wanted to fight once and was pretty good at it. So he went on, he won the King of Cage 45 belt and retired after that. He had to.
Awesome. And what's he taught you about fighting over the years?
He's a coach, a father. He managed it up until I just signed with Ricky Vasquez with Phenom. He's taught me a lot, you know, fighting and just the lifestyle and, you know, trying to keep me on the, you know, the right path towards my dreams and towards my goals. He's really helped.
Cool. And your record is 11-2, is that right?
Yeah, 11-2.
All right. And is there anybody out there that you really want to fight bad right now?
Actually, yeah, Robbie Peralta. He just got signed into the UFC. I was supposed to fight him for the Gladiator Challenge 45 belt when I fought back in April. He backed out a week before saying he had a broken foot. He was at the fight, walking fine, messing around with his buddies. I saw him there. He just got signed to the UFC and beat one of my buddies, Mike Lulo, from Kirk Jackson's. And that, I mean, that'd be my first choice, getting signed with the UFC would be him.
And what would you say you enjoy most about mixed martial arts?
I'm sorry?
What would you say you enjoy most about the sport of mixed martial arts?
The competition, the lifestyle, the training, the dedication, the life lessons, I mean, everything about the sport. You know, I live the sport, I breathe it, I love it, you know, been doing it forever.
What do you think about this, you know, the UFC being the big number one organization out there and how they operate?
I love it. Dana White, I mean, God bless this sport with Dana White. You know, he's really done a lot with this sport in the last however many years. He's taken it to freaking levels that I, you know, didn't think of. You know, I never thought we'd be more popular than boxing. And, I mean, now we are. You know, pay-per-view is getting sold more than boxing. We're, you know, he's really let the sport take off, and it'd be an honor to fight under him. He's a great businessman.
Sorry, I just got on the line. I'm Rich's co-host. I was downstairs getting my, my quote-unquote medication. But Rich and I always discuss this with our guests, whether they're a boxing-based guest or mixed martial arts guest. And the one thing is Rich and I always talk about is the difference in pay scale. I'm a boxing guy through and through. I've been involved in boxing for 17 years now. And as you look, I mean, and even if you look at the what the guys made last week, Mayweather and Ortiz, they are making like so much more than the MMA guys are making. The UFC guys, like, what do you think is holding the UFC cards back from the fighters making a lot of money? I mean, Dana White's making a hell of a chunk of change, and I don't know how much the wealth is getting spread around.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, that's one of the biggest issues with fighters right now, especially, you know, great, talented fighters that want to fight full-time, not having the ability to. You know, I'm working full-time construction, and I just be the tough guy, and I can't live off that paycheck, you know, that got me by for my next month's rent and all the bills and, you know, supporting me and my wife and our baby on the way. The pay scale, man, is just ridiculous. It's a big difference from MMA and boxing. The reason why, I can't really say, you know, maybe someone's holding, you know, being stingy, but, you know, it's not for me to say. It's, I don't know. I mean, maybe Dana, maybe someone, I don't know, I'm not going to say it, but, you know.
I look at it this way, and like I said, I'm more of a boxing guy. I always have been. But you do simple mathematics. Okay, say you're putting on a fight card here, and you have and I know Dana White. We were listening to one of his press conferences one time, and he was bashing a boxing pay per view that was going to be around the same time. I think they were a week different, and he goes, my card's going to have seven great fights, and the other, it was actually a Floyd Mayweather fight about 2 years ago against Marquez. You got Floyd Mayweather, he's just going to be dancing. So you got one fight versus seven fights. And I'm sort of thinking, no, the pay-per-view boxing's going to have at least three. And that's Trump, because my fight's going to be this and that. And I'm sort of thinking, okay, even if you have to, on your total part of the card, pay 20 guys or for 10 fights, and on a boxing card, you have three televised fights and maybe three fights not televised, you're paying 12 guys. And each of them draws 20,000 people in the arena. And that's a generous number, of course. But they just say is an average ticket price for each card is, say, $100. And you have 20,000 people. So you put your math right there.
how much that is. Then you have your pay-per-view revenues. And if the UFC draws, say, a million buys at $50 a piece, that's $50 million right there. Why are these guys getting paid so little? I'm looking at the simple math, and I know, yeah, Don King is a shyster, but when Mike Tyson was coming out of out of jail, he was getting $30 million a fight, and the other guys on the card were getting handsomely paid too. They were getting, more than a million.
Yeah, I don't know. Someone told him on all the extra cash, Someone's making a lot more money than the fighters are, and I don't think it's fair, on my side, being a fighter, I think we should be getting paid a lot more for what we do, but it's the price you pay for a sport that you love, money's going somewhere, not to us right now,
Yeah, it's interesting that the guys that are running it, the majority owners of it, Fatias, and they own casinos. We've got so many other business enterprises going, they just bankrupted their casinos. And the UFC is really their top-dollar company right now. It just kind of came out of nowhere. And Dana White gets a ton of credit for everything good that happens in the UFC. But I would guess these guys have a lot to do with how it's run, too. And, the casino, the house always wins. So, they're on a sort of mentality. There was even a Forbes article, they called them cash machines years ago, that actually assessed the value of the UFC back then as a billion-dollar company. And back then, it wasn't. But right now, it might be. But this Fox deal is huge. And there's
seven-year deal. That's amazing.
And they're taking every chunk of it they can, it seems like. They've got a sponsorship tax. They've got certain fighters are taking care of other fighters. They can get paid as little as $3,000 for a fight.
there's not much we can do about it. We can't really, all team up and say we're not going to fight, because there's thousands of other guys that will go in there and fight for 3-3. People will fight for the money they're offering. They don't have to pay us what they're paying boxing, because, we're settling for that. And I don't know how that would work managing-wise or who would get us more money, but, people's dreams are to be in the UFC. A real fighter wants to make it to the UFC and wants to be the champ. They're going to fight for what they're going to fight for, They get offered 6-6 for their first three fights in the UFC. They win all three, and it bumps up to 10-10 or 12-12. I think that's ridiculous. I think we should be getting paid a lot more. But if it's your dream, you're going to fight. You're going to say, oh, no, I'm not going to. I'm not going to take that. I'll go fight somewhere else to make two more extra grand. It's not the UFC. So they kind of have that advantage and that leverage over us. And, I'm one of them. They offer me, UFC calls right now and offers me $500. I'll go fight anyone they ask me to.
It's gotten to that level, too. It's just pretty interesting. And they've always realized that their name alone.
Definitely.
Greatness, so it could be marketed to the hilt. And that's one thing.
Definitely.
I can't tell you how many local cards, either the special guest or one of the fighters is an ex-UFC fighter. It's supposed to drive.
Definitely. Everywhere now.
And that's the other point there. But as far as your career, what's your ultimate goal in the sport?
UFC champ, 145-pound UFC champ, whoever has it at the time it gets offered to me, I'm going to take it from them, Whether Aldo still has it or some up-and-coming right now has it, when I get the chance, I'm taking that belt. That's my dream and my sport. That's the goal that I'm going to achieve, whether it's a year from now or 5 years from now.
And what do you think about the WEC merging with the UFC so far? How do you think that the lighter weights are blended in to these cards?
I think it's amazing. I think that's part of the reason the sport's jumped. These 35ers and 45ers are a lot more exciting, to certain people. And, it's a lot more exciting than most 70-pound fights or 205s or whatever the weights are, because every fight, whether it's a main card for a title or it's an undercard, 45 or 35, those fights are going to be exciting. They're all quick. Everybody in that weight division is quick. You're not a man in weight 135 or 145, and you're not quick. Like, you're quick, you hit hard, and it's exciting. We've got the cardio. I love it that it's in UFC now. I'm glad they brought the weight class in. It allowed me to drop to 45s. I've always been able to make 45s. I've just been fighting at 55s because that's the lowest weight they had, you know. And like I said, that's my dream. And as soon as they brought that in there, I said, I'm dropping to 45s, fighting my real weight and making it in there at 45s.
And what would you say has been the best moment of your career so far?
Definitely my last fight. It was a big fight, you know. Biggest name I fought yet, and not the biggest name, but you know, biggest name for me. You know, it's the biggest name I've been offered. I was supposed to fight Matt Veitch. I was supposed to fight Steve Lopez. Numerous other ex-UFC guys, and ended up backing out for whatever reason. Cameron Dolly took the fight. That was the biggest moment for me. You know, I was kind of put up or shut at the time, you know, kind of test and see where I'm at. And me being able to beat him at what he's best at, I mean, I'm a wrestler and jits and ground and pound. I mean, that's how I fight. And me going 3 rounds with him, 12 minutes out of those 15, being on our feet and just dominating Cameron Dolly, kind of, you know, it was a good reality check for me and let me know where I was at in this game.
He's one of those guys that came out of the Ultimate Fighter, right?
Yeah, he was on the U.S. versus U.K. season.
Right. Yeah, he did pretty well. He got pretty far in that. And, you know, he definitely had a dynamic style for a little while in the sport. But what's next for you, you think? Who do you think you're going to get to face off against?
I really have no idea right now. Whoever my manager tells me to fight, I'm fighting. Anybody that acts out of 45s, any UFC card coming up, my name's one of the names in there. Hopefully I'll get the call, someone backs out, and whoever it is, you know. Whoever's in my way, I'm going to fight. It doesn't matter to me.
Now, do you have a favorite fighter or somebody that you've looked up to in the fight game over the years to try to imitate?
Not much imitate. Being around Joe my whole life, I've gotten to meet a lot of UFC fighters and train with a lot of UFC fighters, you know. Gray Maynard, Clay Guida, you know, all the guys from Jackson's, all the guys from Team Quest out in Vegas, all the Cobra Kai guys out there. Got to meet a lot of them. Grew up good friends with Quentin Jackson. Style-wise, though, that I have tried to imitate, and I'm starting to try to now, I think Frankie Edgar, honestly, is the best wrestler in the sport right now. He is just such a great wrestler and just uses his boxing so well and his movement. It's unbelievable. I'm trying to not mimic him, but, you know, I try and steal things from fighters that I see that I feel I can do or would make me better at my game. I don't want to imitate anybody. I don't want to be like anybody in this sport. You know, I'm Cody Bollinger. And I'm going to make a name for myself, not trying to be like someone else. You know, I'm going to fight like I fight. But, yeah, I'm going to steal things from fighters along the way, and Frankie Edgar is one of them right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Tony and I talk every now and then about how it seems like these MMA guys in general have a lack of boxing skills. You know, they're good at striking,
yeah.
And kicks and, you know, the roundhouses. But, you know, if their boxing was just a little bit better, it would make so much.
Yeah, definitely.
Frank,
yeah, that's definitely lacking in the sport right now. But Frankie Edgar seems to be doing the best with it, I believe. I mean, there's a couple guys, but yeah, boxing itself is dynamic boxing lacking right now.
And Chris Lytle just retired. He was an excellent boxer when came to.
Yeah.
That's why he got all those bonuses, you know. Fight of the night, knockout of the night bonuses, because he's such a good boxer. Actually had a professional boxing career. So,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting to look at guys like that. You know, so few guys that can get away with just having those two skills, wrestling and boxing, but Frank does it.
kind of, you know, he has a little bit of jiu-jitsu too to mix in, but those are his strengths, and he makes it work.
Yeah, definitely. I can't go from what I'm saying.
I was starting to drink cranberry juice, thinking I could flush out an infection. So They're like, no, man. They're like, you're going to the hospital. So I went in, they ran some tests. My blood pressure's high, but I don't have a kidney infection, thank God. I don't have kidney stones, and I don't have diabetes. That's all good. They ran blood tests on me, and they all came out negative. And the doctor looked at me, and he goes, you're out of gas, dude. He's like, you got nothing. He's like, I'm looking at you right now, and just talk to you the way you've been feeling the last few weeks. He's like, you got nothing left. He's like, that's what it is. You got extreme fatigue. He goes, you're pushing yourself too hard. He's like, you need to relax. You need to, you know, not work as many hours. And he's like, and you need to, you know, just get up in the morning, eat a breakfast, then eat a lunch, eat a dinner. Keep things on a routine basis. And I haven't had a chance to even do that yet. I'm, you know, not eating breakfast in the morning, or I'm, you know, chugging a yogurt on my way out. I got to cut my caffeine down. That's not happening either, because I need something to pick me up and keep me going. So, yeah, I'm a little bit concerned. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, can I make it through this? I'm sure I can. But, you know, I definitely need, like, a break.
What, do you want a break right now?
No.
Okay.
I took a break a little bit ago. I got a thing in Cranberry juice and chugged it.
Yeah, all right. So you're hanging. You just want to make the point.
Yeah.
Take a break, folks. You know, every now and then. Yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, you get into a job situation like that. Like, I remember my worst job was working circulation at a newspaper and delivering sometimes like 350 to 400 papers in a single day. And then dealing with all the issues that pop up after the fact with other and it was a very, very stressful job. You know, but it is what it is, you know. That's what's available. The jobs are going so fast now, it's like these kids coming out of college got no choice. They got nothing.
Well, no.
It's kind of unfortunate. And, you know, no matter who gets to be voted president, you're going to have this problem here.
Yeah, I know.
People are starting to figure out, you know.
Well, you know, people are working longer. And with the money not being good, like in my business, you know, people sign up for, a contract with us. And they might want to, I have one account. They want to get, they pay for one visit per month at $50 a month. And would they get, but they get free services there? Dude, they're calling me every 2 weeks. So instead of, I pulled a record from this year, they've gotten 24 visits, and they've only paid for 8 of them. I'm like, we're making no money off them. I mean, that sucks. Right before we got on the air tonight, I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting here getting ready, as I was telling you, I get an instant message from a coworker of mine saying, hey, do you got a minute? I got a question. I said, it better not be about work. Oh, I'm sorry. I said, what's up? Well, so-and-so called me, and they're having a problem. I'm like, whoa. I'm sitting at home on my computer. I said, you're lucky you didn't try to call me, because I said, I'm about to go on my show in like 2 minutes. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, you know, I don't get paid the big bucks, so when I leave, I leave. You know, with one account, you know, the director is, you know, trying to, you know, he's trying to bash us, and we don't want to give him a reason. I said, you know what, I'd like to bash him. And not just verbal bashing either. Bash his head.
Yeah, it's rough out there. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why I try to do as much freelancing as possible. Doesn't quite pay the bills as it goes right now. But, you know, getting by. I'm squeaking by on the side work and stuff. But I just got to figure out a way to make the site a little bit more profitable. Trying to, you know, flip different ways around, but sounds like your best bet, Tony, would be to go make friends, real good friends, with this new promoter in town. She turns out to be.
I'm working on it, bro. You know what?
Girl.
working
with her. Sounds like a hot.
I wouldn't mind that.
But we, you know, hopefully we'll get her on the week after next.
Yeah, absolutely.
we do have an interview coming up with Chuck O'Neill from The Ultimate Fighter. Just had another season of The Ultimate Fighter start last night. And at this point, I really didn't get to watch more than, you know, 20 or 30 minutes of the two-hour episode. I kept flipping back and forth. One of my favorite legal shows just started again last night, Harry's Law. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a pretty good show, I think. It's Kathy Bates is a lawyer.
Like
the Stephen King movie there. Can't think of it off the top of my head. She's pretty funny. But anyway, The Ultimate Fighter, former competitor, Chuck O'Neill. Last fight in the UFC, I think this up, because he fought his friend, Charlie Rader, from the house. So that was kind of interesting. But he's actually from the New England area, right down the street from where I lived for a while in Weymouth. He grew up in Rockland, I believe. So we had a couple common connections there in the area. And anywhere I recognize his accent, of course, as soon as he started talking on the show. But he made an incredible recovery from, thinking he was out of the tournament to getting back in. So he had quite an interesting run there. I want to talk to him about that and what he's doing now and all that. Before we get him on, there's an interesting story from wrestling that I want to talk about, believe it or not. Hugh Jackman broke a wrestler's jaw on Raw.
That was a win.
You see that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but it was not legit. He did not break it.
Okay.
That was a work.
Hairline mandibular fracture. He says he's getting a special mouth guard tomorrow. But I don't know. I watched the clip of it, and it looks like, you know, that's probably not what caused it. If anything caused it, it was getting your head whipped around by that leg thing or whatever the hell it was before the punch. Those guys, like, basically clotheslined each other. They were going full steam. That's kind of interesting. It's, of course, trying to market the movie Real Steel. So, we'll see how good that really is. I hope it's not another Warrior situation where they hype it up so much. You know, you think it's the best thing since sliced bread. It turns out to be just an okay movie. But it's like Rock'em Sock'em Robots in the new century. Real Steel. I know, it's kind of a funny concept. But looks like they did a lot of work to make it real. Transformers was a big movie, and it's kind of got that same feel, so who knows? We might see part 2, 3, and 4. It's going to be the metal Rocky. Let's get Chuck on. Chuck O'Neill.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron, and we also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line.
Yo.
What's going on, guys?
Not much. Looking forward to kind of picking your brain. We just had The Ultimate Fighter, the latest episode, aired last night. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to be in that environment out there with the house and the fighting and, doesn't even go on
a record,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, for me it was a real surreal opportunity and experience. You know, it was definitely my goal and my main goal when I first got into the, you know, MMA fighting was to try to get to the pinnacle of being in the UFC, and I really wanted to get the experience of going through the Ultimate Fighter. I thought that would be the most fun path to go through, and you know, being there, just living within my dream. It was awesome. I loved it. And, you know, there was guys that wake up next to me every day and they'd complain about wanting to go home and miss their girlfriend and miss their kids and miss this and miss that. But, you know, I loved it. I took advantage of every opportunity I had within that house and lived it up to the most.
All right. And you're actually from Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, I was from Mass. I just recently moved up to Nashville, New Hampshire, though, so changed up in my camp a little bit.
Yeah, last place I lived out there, I'm actually in Vegas now, but I lived up in the Tacoma, New Hampshire area by the lake.
Oh, up in New Hampshire, you said?
Yeah, by right by Lake Winnipesaukee.
Oh, yeah. My roommate actually has a family house up that way.
Cool. So it's one thing we got in common. But, you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned, you know, not wanting to go home, you know, no realizing the situation, you know, because I think guys from the whole New England area have that fighter's mentality in their blood.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I knew why I was there, and I knew what I wanted to do with it. Nothing was going to get in my way and distract me, so it was a good time.
Mm-hmm. What was it like being in that situation where you kind of came off the shelf thinking you were done, and then, you know, they got another chance and got so far with it?
It was awesome. You know, again, I wanted to take the opportunity and live it to the fullest and take it as far as I could. You know, losing that first fight to Zach Davis, I got a little wrapped up and got a little cocky. Being on the show, you know, I felt like I was doing really well with everyone on my team during training, during practices and everything. And like I said, I went into that fight really cocky, and it was a real big slap in the face and a wake-up call. And, you know, I had to fight 4 days later against a tough Javier, but it was definitely worth it. And, you know, nothing you want in life's easy, so definitely had to put in a lot of hard work and effort to get where I got.
Right.
I mean, you don't really see it on the show too much, but, you know, you just think every week there's a fight, no big deal. But, you know, I ended up fighting 4 times in 17 days, and that's, you know, 4 weight cuts in 17 days and 4 rehydration processes in 17 days. It was definitely a lot on my body. My body was pretty messed up after the whole experience, but well worth it.
Yeah, that's the unseen thing, too. And I pointed out an issue that I saw with the show years ago, actually maybe about a year and a half ago it kind of came to me, that it's kind of funny the way that they have it, you know, particularly designed so that your coach is trying to pick a mismatch when he has control of the fights. So it kind of makes it an unfair fight. And the fact that it's not on your record and you're fighting so many times in one little short period of time, it does raise questions about the health part of things. And they just instituted, of course, this massive health care program. But what about the long-term effects when you're gone from the UFC, you know?
Oh, no, exactly. I mean, I'm talking, like, we finished filming in March, and I was, you know, blessed with the opportunity to fight for the UFC back in June. But even still, my body wasn't back to normal health yet. I was really messed up. I mean, I walk on the heavier side of, you know, 195, almost 200 pounds in my downtime, and I was waking up at 180 every day on the show, and my body was just destroyed. I look awful. Like, I lost all my muscle mass and everything, and it was tough. And if I ever had to do it again, I would definitely do it at 185 on the show, just because, you know, cutting down to 170 in such a short period was rough. And I'm just getting to the point where over the last couple months, I've gotten my strength back up, I got my size back up, and starting to feel better again. But, you know, that's almost 6 months later now, so.
I know, talking about doing weight cutting like that, I did that back when I was a junior back in college. We were getting ready for the college boxing regionals, and I had fought my whole year at no lighter than 178.5, and I fought up as high as heavyweight. And three days before the tournament's going to start, I'm going to be at 180. All I got to do is step on the scale. And the coach goes to me, he goes, you know, an opening just came up at 165. I said, and he's like, you think you can make it in 3 days? And I looked at him, and I'm like, yeah, I can do it. Wow. Most amazing mental and physical thing I've ever been through. You know, just from that night alone, I mean, people said, were you hungry? I said, no, I wasn't. I was not hungry at all for the 3+ days that I did it. I said, because I was so concentrated on being thirsty. I said for lunch, I'd have like a small bowl of lettuce and a orange sliver and a couple pieces of celery, all plain, no dressing, no nothing, and a couple, like a small glass of water. Then I said, I'd go work my ass off for like 3 hours. Then I'd go sit in the sauna. I had no legs. And then I'd go for dinner. Once again, I'd have a small bowl of lettuce, an orange sliver, a little bit of celery, maybe a carrot. And then I'd have a little bit of water, and then I would just go do it again. And I remember my roommate in college was like, dude, you look bad. Because every night I'd have a huge mug of water sitting at my desk, and I would just kind of sip it and spit it out, just to keep my mouth wet. I don't know how I went to class. I don't. And that the night of the regionals, I made the weight the first day, and I had a bye, and I had to make it again the next day. And I remember just drinking spigot water, and a friend of mine had a Gatorade, and I gave him for a mouthful because that's all I could handle. And I said, everything tasted metallic. And they said, that's your body rejecting it. And then I lost that fight that night because I got knocked down with about maybe 15 seconds to go against a fighter that I had beaten who had never buckled me once in our two previous fights. And my legs couldn't hold me up anymore, which is a blessing because I got to fight a weight class higher in the Nationals. The only shame about it was if I would have made it to the Nationals at 165, I would have had a chance of upsetting the four-time undefeated national champion from Navy.
Wow. Sounds like my luck when I ended up not having to fight the guy from Air Force Academy who could hit you on your stool from his own corner.
Yeah.
And on ESPN, too, that year we had our national tournament in boxing. They put the main fights on ESPN, so the kid from West Point who beat me got knocked out by the kid from Air Force Academy on ESPN. I got a bronze medal and went out with a fight. But you have actually a good striking game, Chuck. Tell us a little bit about how you got into fighting in the first place and developed that style.
That was pretty much my brawling technique that was going on in the show. That's what everyone saw. You know, I come forward, I come at you, and that's just my hard-nosed, I guess, Irish way of being. It's like, I'm just going to come and I'm going to fight you. And that's what I do. I come to fight, and anytime I get hit, I'm going to start brawling. I guess that's the way I was at. So when I first started training at Lozon MMA, that with Joe Lozon back like six and a half years ago, that's when I first started getting into MMA, and it was, you know, pretty much a jiu-jitsu school, and I was like one of the only guys that actually liked to kickbox, so I was kind of the standout there. And, you know, since then I've moved on and gone through a couple different camps. You know, I went through Cicatal and Mark Delagrati for a little bit, and now I work with the boxing coach, Muhammad Brooks, up in New Hampshire. So definitely keep working and try to refine my striking and, you know, really concentrating on my jiu-jitsu and wrestling all at the same time, you know, because you can't be just one-dimensional anymore in the sport. Those days are long gone. So you got to be very well-rounded, and that's what I definitely concentrate on a daily basis.
Right. And what's your ultimate goal in the sport?
You know, I obviously got a taste of the UFC, and that's where I want to be. I want to be back in the UFC, fighting the best and challenging myself. And, you know, if you're not challenging yourself in life, then life's boring, in my opinion. So I want to wake up every day with a tough challenge ahead of me and really go after it. And, you know, even day in, day out, my coaches, they challenge me every day, and that's what keeps me going. That's what pushes me and motivates me.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Now, what's the best part about being up in New Hampshire?
Basically, I moved up here to be close to my main training partner, Jimmy Quinlan. He went to Nationals for college wrestling, and, you know, he's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt world champion. So he's definitely a top-notch guy. And I started training with him under his instructor, Nate Ryan, at Mass BJJ for my Jiu-Jitsu, and also my Jiu-Jitsu under John Fain at Gracie Bond, New Hampshire. And that's where I'm also working with Muhammad Brooks, my striking coach. So there's a lot of really good training partners up here. I basically train every day with my training partner, Dennis Olson, as well, who's going to be fighting John Howard down in Miami the week before my fight. So I definitely got a lot of good guys around me right now. It's in a good place. And, you know, Tom Lawler comes up and cross-trains with us and stuff. So we got a lot of good guys at my disposal in this area. And I definitely have seen my skill level advance over the couple months I've been here already.
Yeah, some people forget, you know, New England has quite a pedigree of fighters. You consider all the big UFC guys who have come from New England and are still around. You know, guys like Joe Lozon, was that Kenny Florey, and those guys always come out to the local events, too. Right? When I used to be out there in Massachusetts and really started getting into writing about MMA, there was a lot of local shows, even when it wasn't regulated in Massachusetts. And I actually, through the connections that I got to the website, I was actually able to go to a fight where John Jones was fighting down at Foxwood.
Yeah.
It was one of his early knockouts.
Yeah.
A company called USFL, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's unbelievable the way the circuit developed there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a ton of good guys, and, you know, we're also, like, kind of close-niche where we've all kind of trained together at one point or another, so it's all fun, and it's all good to push each other. And, you know, there's a lot of guys to your left and your right that are going to make it to that big show, so it's just a matter of time.
But the good thing about it, though, is, you know, even if you don't get back, you can always have that experience of saying, you know, I was on that show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to be that guy that tries to ride the coattails of being like, oh, I was on the Ultimate Fighter. I want to make it back to the UFC and make my mark and say, I'm a UFC fighter. I don't want to be, oh, I was on the Ultimate Fighter. So.
Yeah, by all means, shoot for the stars, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. As I said, you know, I got to stay driven. That's the type of person I am. I got to stay driven or I'm bored.
And what actually would you say is the biggest thing that you've changed about your fight game since being on the show?
Definitely, you know, getting more aggressive. My whole stand-up game is actually a lot more aggressive now and more fine-tuned. My jiu-jitsu's gotten a lot better. My wrestling's gotten a lot better. And like I said, I got my body healthy. So just all around, everything's a lot better right now. You know, I recently did a grappling tournament where I had to, like, really concentrate to make 194.8 with a gi on. So I definitely had put on some size. And I just kind of stayed out of the limelight and put my nose to the grind and went after it. And definitely filled in a lot of gaps and, you know, got myself to the point where I'm ready to take a fight again.
Cool. And do you have any prospects for next fight?
What's that?
Do you have any prospects for a next fight?
Well, as far as, like, when my next fight is going to be?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm fighting actually October 15th down in Miami against Marcus Davis.
Oh,
all right. Yeah.
Down in Miami, huh?
So yep.
Big trip for this fight.
Oh, yeah. That's all right. You know, my last one's in Vegas, so keep it traveling.
Right. That's a good place to go in October.
Yeah. It's a big fight, and a lot of people are really excited about it. Just, you know, he's obviously got a lot more experience on me, but I've trained with him before, and we're definitely going to come out and throw down in the center of the cage, and it's going to be a real entertaining fight.
Yeah, well, you're both Irish, too.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be smashing each other in the face. So, but I've got all the respect in the world for Marcus. He's a tough guy. He's awesome in the sport, and, you know, he's a great guy. Like, outside of the sport, he's an awesome guy, and I'd love to hang out with him, so. It's going to be a good fight.
One of those guys, you know, win or lose, you always wanted to see him in the UFC. He always put on exciting fights. And it was one of those guys when they cut him, it was like, why would you do it to that guy? he's great for the sport, you know, and they just let him go.
Yeah. Nothing. So, as I said, a lot of people are excited for it. They're expecting us to both come out and try to rip each other's heads off, and I wouldn't expect anything less.
Mm-hmm. And what do you expect out of him coming into this fight? You know, we haven't seen him in a while. At least I haven't seen him because he hasn't been in the UFC. But have you been able to see any of his recent fights and see what he's like?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of my major sponsors, SmartPowers.com, they actually sent me up every fight that Marcus Davis has had in the limelight, every DVD he's had. And every day I have about an hour to two of film study. So I know all of his little ticks, all of his little things he does, where he comes in off of what. And, you know, he's a real good fighter, real explosive. He's a good southpaw. He moves real well and strong guy. So, as I said, it's definitely a tough fight, but it's going to be fun.
All right. And what do you enjoy most on mixed martial arts?
The thrill, the challenge. You know, the challenge myself. It's definitely a big passion of mine, and it gives me the drive and my determination to be something special in life, not just another run-of-the-mill guy.
Awesome. And what got you into fighting in the first place?
Being a real kid, and I saw the first episode of The Ultimate Fighter, and I was like, wow, you must pay to do this?
So you actually...
I was actually 200 pounds.
Wow. 200 pounds.
Yeah.
That's 240?
245.
45. Just 20 pounds short of the dead weight limit. I've been there. I broke my ankle once when I was working for the newspaper back in the day. And I gained up to about 250 pounds from wrestling at Quinn's High, actually, at 171 when I was in 155 my senior year of high school. So that was a big weight gain for me, but I want to come back to box and workout to get back in shape. And it does. You know, I do those ab workouts. And I used to be known for my ab workouts when I coached at Norwich University. And one day, like, pretty girls literally came down to practice. I'm like, what is that? They heard about your ab workout. You know, it took a half an hour at the end of practice every day to do an insane ab workout. And you see boxers and mixed martial artists, and they're literally the guys in their best shape in the world. So that's what helps gain popularity. You really, you have to be something special to compete. But what would you say is the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight, Chuck?
Just put myself on mental preparation, make sure my weight's good to get ready for, you know, the weight cut that I do. As I said, I'm a heavier 170 pounder, and I cut a decent amount of weight, and I do about 15 pounds in that last week. So getting myself there and, you know, mentally ready to fight, and I, you know, not having another screw up. I definitely sucked in my last fight. There's no and if or's about it. And definitely just make sure I don't have a replay of that.
Mm-hmm. And going back to the show, what are the kinds of things that we don't really see? The camera's not rolling on you. And what were some of the moments that stick out for you from being on the show that maybe we all didn't get to see in public?
Basically, it was like the Chuck and Ramsey, like, goofball show. Me and Ramsey joked around a lot, and we did a lot of goofy crap. So it didn't make all the show, like, you know, from taking someone's bedroom set and put it outside past the marker boundaries where they're supposed to be outside and calling the producers when they go to get their things and, you know, throwing people in the pool and egging people and, you know, just having fun. Like, you're locked up in a house, you got to bring your own fun to the table and be lighthearted about it. So, I mean, there was a lot of goofy stuff going on, and I'm sure when the DVD actually gets released, there'll be a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that you'll get to see that you didn't get to see on the show. So I'm sure I'll be the centerpiece of a lot of that goofballness. So.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it helps to be a character, you know, on the show?
Well, you know, I didn't go out there, and, you know, you can ask any of my friends, and all my friends will say the same thing. You know, when I went on the show, it's not like I put on some kind of mask and decided to try to be someone that I'm not. Like, I went out there, and that's just me. I'm lighthearted, I'm fun, I like to joke around and be goofy, and, you know, you can't take things too seriously, like, unless it's fighting. Like, fighting, obviously, I take seriously, but outside of that, I'm not going to walk around and go stick up my butt all day and just try to be that kind of better. So.
I think one of the episodes that really stuck out for me was when you wanted to do the transition. You didn't want to be Trash Bag Charlie anymore, was your words. And you did the shave, and, you know, you went out there and you fought. And that was kind of funny. I think everybody could relate to that.
Yeah. I mean, that was, like I said, that was me kind of coming on being a little cockier than I should have been, and, you know, kind of for that much, but it's not like a character. That's just me, and I was being a little too extreme with who I am, and I just kind of buckled it in and went to work.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And so the UFC, you really enjoy working with them as a company.
Yo, that was awesome. How did I enjoy it?
Yeah, what were the particular things that made it different than anything else working with the UFC?
Oh, it's awesome. You know, I mean, I walk in, and obviously, you get there, and they have a guy who's just in charge of all the fighters, and he checks your weight, make sure you're good. You know, they take care of you, make sure you're fed, make sure you got a good place to stay, and just, like, everything's just so professionally ran, and just everything's so nice, and that's just, like, the pinnacle of where you want to be, and that's obviously where I want to get back to. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be hooked on with the promotion right now, W1 Warrior One, which Marcus and I are going to be fighting for, which is a very good promotion. Having the first fight, so you know, if I got my name out there, and you know, promotions are definitely trying to still get me on board. But obviously, as I said, I want to get back to the UFC. So
just don't miss any press conferences, like.
No, that's not me. I don't do that.
What do you think about some of the drama going around the UFC with stuff like that? Fight changes, this new Fox deals, you know, some exciting stuff going on, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the UFC is going to be huge, and it's kind of funny because they're pulling in boxer money right now, and our cool is too. Pay-per-view buys and gates and everything, but, you know, fighters are still making low-scale money, but, you know, you'll start seeing that change. You know, the UFC is just making money hand over fist. They're going to take fighters. They do anyways, but it's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that they take care of you. They really genuinely care about you. And it sucks to see guys get cut all the time, but that's not that they don't care about you. They're also a business at the end of the day, and if you're not performing and you're not winning, then they can't keep you around. That's what it's up or echelon, and you gotta stay on top to be on top. So,
right, but they do take people back too.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, when I was released, they told me to, you know, go back, work on a couple things, and then, you know, they're obviously gonna keep an eye on me. So that's why I go out and I took a fight with Marcus Davis. It's not the easiest fight. It's not a walkthrough fight. It's a tough fight. But I go out and I win that fight, and okay, maybe Chuck did mess up on the finale, so it looks good. You gotta be smart about your career.
Yeah. And what would you say was your best moment in the sport so far?
Making the Ultimate Fighter, that was definitely one of the hugest moments. It was just huge. And I'm not a guy that gets overly emotional about things, really. And I remember after the show finished and wrapped, and, you know, I just got the shit beating by Tony, you know, as my body was just destroyed, and Tony took advantage, just beat the crap out of me. I just remember just finally getting my phone back and calling my dad and just getting so emotional. Just, I know, I didn't take any time to really sink any of it in. I just kind of just kept going through day by day and just living the life of it. And I think when it all sunk in, it was a very cool moment and surreal moment to understand what I just went through. And I would definitely say it was probably one of the coolest moments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, even when you just get on there and you're able to fight, you know, especially, well, your episode didn't have the fights to get into the house, though, right?
Yeah, no, our season didn't have that. They just brought him on, and it was really weird. They rushed it and everything. There was a lot of stuff, like I said, they didn't actually show, and it was like 3 episodes less than they usually do.
Right. And what was that like? I mean, obviously you watched previous seasons where they didn't fight to get in the house. Did they tell you why it was changed that year?
I was actually brought on as an alternate. There was a guy, Miles Jury, that was on the show. He blew his knee out. They flew me out as an alternate, flew me back home, said they didn't need me, and then 2 days later asked if I was still near weight, and I was eating pizza when they called. So I just put the pizza down, needless to say, and got flown back out. So, you know, I was on when they were on, like, day 3 or 4 of the production of it all. But, you know, the whole reason behind it was just because they were trying to – they picked who they thought were the 14 best welterweights, and they just felt they didn't need to fight to get in the house, and that, and there was like kind of, I guess, some kind of issue with Spike TV where they didn't have as many show slots, and when they were trying to do finale, it was all kind of rushed.
Yeah.
So.
Well, maybe that's a little bit the reason why they went with Fox instead of Spike again.
Yeah. No. From the sounds of things, you know, I don't know anything particularly, but from the sounds of things, they're kind of, we're in kind of a crappy relationship back and forth, dealing with a lot of crap. So, sounds like for the better that they went with Fox.
Yeah, well, it was definitely a good move to get aligned with the same channel that shows football and baseball, you know, and usually the big marquee games when they do. So, it's important to group the sport with other mainstream sports like that, as well as getting a network TV. It's, of course, important, but just the Fox name just carries it so much closer to a real sport that people will, you know, eat up once they see for the first time on a, you know, a wider scale. So I think it's definitely one of those things that kind of pushes the UFC over the billion-dollar hump there. They're definitely worth that much now. It's like a 10-year deal. It's like the NFL's collective bargaining agreement. Fox. So that's huge. You know, I think it's going to start to make more people, like you said, talk about the issue that the fighters need to be compensated a little bit more here. Now that you guys are making money hands over fist on this, I mean, we are the guys that got you here. So that's one of the things I'm looking forward to seeing. Like, why doesn't an MMA fighter who's in a huge main event make $1 million purse? They're like, paper revenue and all that stuff. Why don't we see at least $1 million event fighter taking home $1 million purse in the UFC? Doesn't make sense. They're making that on the game. Easy. They also have a lot of things with the sponsors. You know, some of you guys coming up, they're sponsors. And now the UFC has this banned sponsors list. You can't have certain sponsors. You have to pay a tax.
Yeah, you have to come up with a certain amount of money to be able to actually be sponsored within a UFC event.
That's just kind of crazy. But, you know, the one thing we just talked about with Cody Bollinger was on before you here tonight. And he said the same thing to him about how you're at least the one good thing about being associated with the UFC is that you can always, have that label, from the UFC, technically, when you leave or whatever, whether you're trying to get back or whether you're done with it for good, that label does help sell your image, but...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We still need to work on the pay scale, Definitely something boxing is kicking ass in right now. Although, it's like a lot of people make the point, too, that some of these first-time boxers aren't making as much as some of the MMA guys. But it's all subjective. We'll see. I just would like to see Dana White and the Fertitta brothers step up and, put some big paychecks on the line for these fighters. Especially the heavyweights. Like, one thing that really strikes me is one of the reasons why they now have the medical program there is what Brock Lesnar's been going through. Not only is he's got this huge, massive infection deal or whatever he's got with the, all the surgeries, but he also got ripped up really bad in the fight with Velasquez there. So he really needed medical insurance. And, even though he has millions of dollars or whatever from the WWE, I think that was one of those cases where he realized, it's a brutal sport. It takes a lot out of your body. He's a guy who's in shape. And he's supposed to be ready for that. But it's just amazing to see them trying to implement that and, work around that major issue and at least confront it. So that's one of the good things that they've done. But they definitely still need to provide more and not have these fighters rely on their sponsorships in some cases just to get through training. The more guys they add, the harder it is to get on a card, too. A lot of these guys sit around and wait for a while to get a fight. One thing I did notice is, I think a couple weeks ago, there was a couple stories that came through about all of a sudden the UFC is offering 7- and 8-fight contracts to people. That was not too long after the Fox deal came out. But when did you first get into MMA, and what do you think about the popularity growth of it since then?
Well, I first started training back in 2005, and, seeing the popularity is just huge. Like, it's just grown so much to the point where, you say MMA, and people are like, what? And then you say, oh, UFC, and they're like, oh, okay, I know what that is. But now you say MMA, and, people at, Walmart know what you're talking about. So it's definitely gotten a lot bigger than it ever was before. There's video games and it's trading cards and, there's MMA stuff in your supermarket. So, like I said, the biggest thing that's funny to me is, you say MMA now, everyone understands, but before you had to say, oh, UFC. Now, things have definitely changed a lot.
Well, there was that movie, too, the Warrior movie there that came out, and and they put that stereotype right in there with the principal of the school, the guy who was in a local MMA fight, and the principal of the school, this guy's a teacher, was it UFC? And the guy says, yeah, the MMA guy says, yeah. So he's the stereotype. And it's something that a lot of purists don't want to say. It happens. They're the WWE of MMA, really. They're the most popular circuit, so people associate the sport with their name. It's going to happen. But it's definitely, even though they bought up Strikeforce, I think there's definitely a lot of room for some of these other promotions to start gaining some, because they're getting to the point where they're going to be full up on talent. And they just had the, you probably watched last night's episode of The Ultimate Fighter. Many guys are fighting to get in the house now, and they're making all these changes to the show. They're obviously going to be full up for a while, in a position where a lot of these guys are, in these other promotions are going to start to turn some heads. They're still putting on fights like Brock Lesnar versus Overeem now. They signed Overeem. That was pretty interesting. And people went to the heavyweights. What do you think about this weekend's fight? Rampage versus...
I think John Jones is going to come out there, and he's going to run through Rampage like he's done to everybody else that he's faced. And, his only loss was to Matt Hamill. That was kind of a bullshit call anyways. But John Jones has pretty much ran through and made everyone who he's fought with pretty silly. He's only getting better, and Rampage hasn't looked as good as he has in the past. Rampage is a tough guy. You can never model fully, but John Jones just has way too many tools.
I see Rampage as an excellent brawler type of boxer, but if he tries to go stand up with John Jones, he's going to get hit with back fists and back kicks. The reach makes a difference with Jones. Not only is he a good technical fighter, but he has the reach to keep you against the cage while he's doing what he's doing to you. So that makes it interesting, I think. But like you said, you never can count Rampage out. He's had some legendary fights. He has way more experience. So I think it's a good test for him. Actually, probably a better test for him at this point than Rashad. Rashad's a lot more technical, unlike him. So I think it's a good fight to build up to the Rashad fight. We see that finally. But it's definitely a good main event for this card.
Yeah.
And as far as also from being on the show, do you find yourself getting recognized just walking out on the street a lot?
Yeah, my look's a little bit different now. I kind of trimmed up my hair a little bit, so I get the double look from people a lot, and people like kind of look at you, and you basically hear them say, "Oh, is that Chuck?" And that's like, I'm the kind of guy, it's a goofball anyway, just come up and say hi. I'm not gonna bite you or fight you if you come up and say hi. So, but no, I was out with my dad a couple weeks ago, and he hasn't really seen it or out in public, because when I hang out with him, I'm not really out in public too much, and they actually came up to me, and he was kind of taken back by it, being like, "Oh, it's my son." So, no, it definitely does happen. I definitely do get recognized.
Yeah, it's kind of funny the way that develops there. I was actually at a show out in Worcester, Massachusetts, that was put on by Butterbean a few years ago. I ran into Rich Attenito, who was on one of the seasons of The Ultimate Fighter there. And I see him backstage with all the people, and I know I recognize him. I went for a show, and I ended up, when I was talking to him, I called him Rich Clemente for some reason. And he goes, "Oh, geez, I wish I was him." And he was one of those guys that actually had a broken hand through most of the show, but they still gave him another shot. New England just has so much talent just hanging out everywhere. Did you ever see John Jones coming up through the circuit fighting him?
Yeah. See him fight a couple of local shows, ripping through people, knocking them out. So.
And what would you say is the most important quality you need to be an MMA?
I would definitely say tough issues.
And as far as what you do outside the cage, do you have any hobbies or anything like that?
I like lifting weights. That's a big hobby of mine.
Lifting weights.
Yes.
Well, that's a good hobby to have as a fighter.
I'm a big fan of napping, so.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello to out there before we let you go for the night?
Yeah, just want to give a shout out to my main training partner, Jimmy Coleman, and all the guys at Mass BJJ and Crazy Bound New Hampshire and Muhammad Brooks. So those are the guys that are making it happen for me behind the scenes, and we're definitely going to go and put out a show October 15th against Marcus Davis, and without all them, it wouldn't be possible. So definitely always thanks to them, and a big shout out to smartpatterns.com and Mike McCandle. So again, another guy that's real supportive of me, helped me out along the way.
We'll keep an eye out on you, and you know, anything that we get PR wise, we'll put it up on the blog and let people know what's going on. And maybe someday when I get back to the New Hampshire area, I'll actually catch you in person, do a video interview or something.
All right, man, sounds good, definitely.
But keep up the good work, and
thank you.
We'll be in touch. Thanks a lot.
All right, man, take care.
So there's Chuck Trujillo.
I'm still here.
Still there, all right.
I think I hit my question quota.
You did. Well, I think we're pretty much down to the wire here. We got like, let's see. 8 minutes left in the show, by my calculations. I did have a couple of links that I really wanted to touch on at some point. If I can find them.
Not a camber, he's some of them in the bill.
Alright. Well, give me 1 second here. I'm just going
to you want to talk about having a taste for something? I've been drinking cranberry juice pretty much nonstop for the past 4 days.
Yeah. So
I went out to, you guys might not know about this good stuff up in Massachusetts. You ever hear of water ice?
Water ice?
Yes.
No. What do you mean water?
It's like a squashy type thing. You know, it's like shaved ice, like flavored. They have Arita's, which is the big popular in this area. What did I get tonight? A cranberry water ice. So you're eating cranberry juice, and now I'm having cranberry desserts. I would make a Thanksgiving dinner and have some cranberry sauce while I'm at it.
There you go.
I am killing a lot of cranberry.
So my aunt used to work.
And you know what?
Right.
And next week, the October is going to be starting. I will be drinking apple cider every day. I was at the one coffee market the other day, and like the one girl, like I was talking to her, they gave me like the weirdest look. I was like, I am dying for a steamed apple cider. She said, well, why don't you just order one? I said, it's not October. I can't have it till October. And she looked at me like I had two freaking heads. I said, excuse me, it's tradition. I see, you see them spiced wafer cookies in aisle 3? Yeah, can't have them till October either. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I am. You know, it's just me. I can't do it till October.
Now, you just had your birthday. I'm actually having my birthday on October 1st. I'll be 30.
Yours is what? Next Saturday, ain't it?
I don't know. I haven't even looked at the calendar to find out yet.
It's October 1st, ain't it?
I know. It's coming up. It always...
It's October 1st.
Comes around the same time.
It's October 1st, right?
And so, yeah, it is October
1st. I think it's next... Yeah, it's next Saturday, because that's the start of the MLB playoffs.
All right. That's the thing, too. It always reminds me of the end of baseball season when my birthday comes up. And the Red Sox need some divine intervention, I think.
Well, they are having an intervention.
Did you hear who they invited into their locker room to give them a pep talk?
Or Ric Flair, yeah, I did see that.
Ric Flair. Woo!
We'll see.
Styling, profiling, wheeling and dealing. Stealing, oh, what was it? Limo riding, jet flying, wheeling and dealing, kiss stealing. Something like that. Woo! It's your boy. Oh, Rick, I got bad news for you. We're not gonna get to do 20 questions this year for my Halloween costume.
Why not?
Because I'm actually recycling two past costumes because one of my friends wants me to bring the half and half Freddy Jason out of retirement this year to take it to costume contest. So I said I would. So I said I'm not gonna break out a brand new costume for a party that has 20 some people there. So I said, I just might recycle my Macho Man Randy Savage costume. So I was like, are you going to do something classic with, like, putting, like, angel's wings and a halo on it? I'm like, no.
You're the ghost, Randy Savage.
Yeah, I'm just a douchebag. So I'm not that much of a dick, you know?
Yeah. Well, did you hear what spots you're putting on Aflac now?
Did I what?
You know we're sponsored by Aflac.
Oh, wonderful. The company that every time I put a something on Career Builder, they're always like emailing me within like 5 seconds trying to get me to be an insurance agent, which I laugh in their face.
Every time I hear that Major Medical on the commercials now that they have from the pitching, I think of the UFC South Plan. Major Medical.
Right.
What about your family? Isolated that clip, but it's not playing very loud. I don't know if you heard it. But anyway, yeah, we got we had a pretty interesting week for combat sports there. You got the article I sent you too about Tommy Morrison, right? Bad guy.
Oh my God, yeah.
Looks
bad. And the only reason I was able to guess that was him was a few months ago, Ring Magazine had a picture of him. He looked pretty bad in there, you know. Hair was real thin. You know, he looked pale. He looked gaunt. And he had, like, a headband on, like, Bruce Springsteen style. And he was standing, like, in, like, a fighter's clothes, but he was in cheap clothes. And he said, like, yeah, he beat his latest drug charges because the arresting officer died in a motorcycle accident.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that one. That was a...
So he had that picture. I'm like, the first guy I thought of it looked like... I said, it doesn't look Randy Couture. But I knew it wasn't Randy Couture. I'm like, that doesn't look like him. I bet it's Tommy Morrison, because he inspired with that on him so bad. So the guy looks like he's 57 years old, but Tommy Morrison's only 42.
He got arrested again on marijuana charges, I think. You know, there was this video that my cousin just, you know, was, like, unbelievably thrilled by one time. It's probably still out there on YouTube. Just search for Faces of Meth. And it's, like, the music video showing all these people before and after having meth habits. And that's what that picture reminds me of. Like, it's been into the meth hardcore or something. Man. In trouble again there. Alright, well, we'll have to wrap it up, I guess, here, Tony.
I won't
speak.
All right.
Till next week. Go Eagles. Sorry your quarterback smacked the F up next weekend. He will recover, I'm sure. Especially he's getting the Kevlar helmet. Have you heard that? He's getting Kevlar pads for anyway, that's it. So we're out of here. And we'll see you next week, folks. Thanks for stopping by. And, of course, don't forget to check out our sponsors. We got MarijuanaMuscle.com, TheHighShop.com. As always, Koki Energy Drinks. Shout-out to them. Get a shipment come. You want some cocaine, Tony? I'll send you some cocaine.
All right. No cocaine for me.
All right.
That's drinkcocaine.com. It's an energy drink. It's not the drugs book. So that's it. We're out of here, and next week we'll be coming back with some more guests. We'll try to throw a boxing guy in there for Tony.
Tonight.
Tornado warning over.